race for governor heated up this week in light of John Doe allegations, a new statement from one of the John Doe prosecutors, and a new ad that the governor's campaign calls slanderous. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have two guests with us from different political perspectives to discuss and debate the top issues in the news this week, including the latest developments in this race for governor, but other top state and national stories as well. And we invite you to weigh in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So Governor Walker wants Mary Burke to pull a new ad in the governor's campaign that he is calling slanderous. The Burke campaign says no. What do you think? Do you think that the ad should be pulled or not, given recent developments? Let's take a listen to this ad.
It started like this.
Prosecutors in Wisconsin are alleging that Governor Scott Walker
participated in a criminal scheme.
Prosecutors claim the governor led a criminal scheme that broke election law.
Then, more bad economic news under Walker.
Not so good economic news. Wisconsin ranking 37th in the country for job creation.
And here in the Midwest, we're dead last. So what does politician Scott Walker do the next day? He launches more attack ads. Scott Walker just isn't working for you.
Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Chris Lotto, a former communications director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
All right. Chris, let's start with you. Should the Burke campaign pull this ad?
Well, I mean, a lot of this is, you know, campaign posturing, and that includes on the Walker campaign's part. As soon as you saw the original paperwork being released that included that word criminal scheme, and you saw it in headlines all over the place, and it was used everywhere, and the ad obviously makes that clear. That's such a loaded term. And the governor is right. You know, nobody has been charged. And, of course, his opponents were going to seize on that phrase and use it. It's certainly within their rights to demand it, but I'm certainly not surprised that Mary Burke's campaign isn't going to pull it. They clearly think, even though Mary Burke initially sort of shied away from using the issues, apparently her advisors got to her and convinced her otherwise, because you have this ad now where it's cramming a whole bunch of stuff into one 30-second thing, and I have my own issues with the ad. I don't think it's particularly effective. But, you know, sure, he can demand it, and it's good campaign fodder for a few days, and the Burke campaign will refuse to pull it. And that doesn't surprise me in the least. I don't think it's going to come down, and that's probably the best, strongest case they can make against Scott Walker at this point.
Christine, anything wrong with that Burke campaign ad?
Well, it's the political season, right? Mm-hmm. So here we go. I think the ad is, if you listen to it carefully, I put on my lawyer hat, you know, and I listen to it carefully, and I say, well, what she's replaying is what the whole nation heard about our governor and what the prosecutor said in documents that were filed with the court, obviously. And then the ad goes right into facts about Walker's job record. I agree with Chris, you know, of course he wants it pulled, but there's nothing slanderous in it. There's no lie in it. There's nothing that's untrue. You know, truth is an absolute defense. It's true. Everything in the ad is true. That's what the prosecutor said in the documents. That's what his record is on jobs. So, you know, what I think is funny is that Walker's ad that's out has been claimed to be false by PolitiFact, and nobody's saying that one should be pulled. So, you know, we're in the political season. Of course he wants it pulled. But there's nothing slanderous in it in a legal standing, and the ad is true. You know, the fact is that there is only a preliminary injunction with regard to this John Doe 2. It's not over, and so, you know, we have a lot more to go.
And we will be be playing the governor's ad that Christine referenced as well. But the news yesterday that Special Prosecutor Francis Schmidt put out a statement through his attorney in which he says in it that that term criminal scheme did not indicate guilt of any person or group. Rather, it was a legal argument justifying the need to pursue the investigation. I'm curious, Christine, why, number one, why this Francis Schmidt felt compelled to put out that statement, and whether, I mean, what this means. It just was saying, yeah, we were alleging the governor was at the center of a criminal scheme. That's what we were investigating, but we didn't prove it yet. Or, you know, this does not mean we proved it.
Well, it's a good question, Joy. You know, and the fact is that the governor has claimed that this John Doe 2 is a political witch hunt. Francis Schmidt is a former U.S. prosecutor, and I think he voted for Bush, and I think he even voted for the governor, and Governor Walker. And, you know, he is a highly ethical man. And I think as a prosecutor, he is practicing good ethics by saying, you know, this matter is still pending. And so he came forward and did what a good prosecutor would do. He said, he's not been convicted yet. This is an allegation. And so he said, you know, this is just an allegation. There's still investigation to do. We're far from done, as opposed to what Governor Walker said when he told everybody the case was over on Fox News. So he's being ethical, and I think it's admirable. He's a good man.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that statement from Prosecutor Schmitz is a powerful one, and the Walker campaign is looking to leverage it, as they should. I mean, look, the phrase criminal scheme, that's a loaded term, obviously. That, you know, I first saw it in a headline when I got my newspaper whenever it came out, I think last week, and I looked down and I said, oh my gosh, people have been charged here. And then you read it and you go, no, nobody's been charged. Nobody's been charged of anything. It's a loaded phrase that unfortunately is being used, exploited really by the Burke campaign, again, because that's really kind of the best stuff they have right now. So, you know, it's not surprising that they're going to take advantage of it. And again, you know, the ad ultimately is probably not going to be pulled. I mean, I don't think there's anything, to Christine's point, illegal about the ad. But, you know, the Walker campaign is doing its best to counteract it. I think none of this is surprising. But yeah, that phrase is, you know, I think ultimately this stuff is going to backfire on the folks who want to take Scott Walker out, because I think this is only going to embolden his supporters. Similar to the recall of a couple of years ago, they see this kind of stuff, and I think it feeds into the perception, which I think there's a lot of truth behind, that this is a witch hunt, that these forces are aligning to try and take him out. And there have been no criminal charges, and yet we're going to use the phrase criminal scheme. That feels kind of loaded, like somebody's trying to stack the deck against him. And I think that is going to fire up the Walker team and his supporters even more.
Let me ask go ahead, Christine.
I just want to say, you know, don't forget John Doe 1, 6 people were convicted. I mean, it's not a witch hunt when they're finding evidence of illegal coordination. I mean, you know, this is far from over. And I think that you have to keep in mind that Mary Burke wasn't the one that jumped on this. The national press did, and really shamed, you know, brought shame in our state. I mean, when we say our governor's on the front page about a criminal scheme, this shouldn't have happened. And any of these actions, you know, that led to this investigation when he was doing this stuff, when he was our governor. I mean, you know, it's really hard to swallow. So, you know, it's not about Mary Burke taking advantage. It's about Scott Walker's bad conduct that shed a light on our state in a very negative way. And she, in that ad, just points it out. Is this the guy we want as our governor? Is this the guy that we want to say we can trust? And that's really what it's all about.
But this is, but that's the thing. I mean, she is exploiting it. I mean, she may not have been the first one out of the gate, but she's clearly going to do it now. And you know, one of the first things that folks statewide are hearing about Mary Burke isn't anything about her record or what she's going to do. They're hearing, you know, an attack ad against Scott Walker. So,
look what Scott Walker's doing to Mary Burke. I mean, we're going to talk about his head in a minute, but Chris,
and Scott Walker has 3+ years as governor with a record. So, I mean, people across the state, you know, this idea that they all know who Mary Burke is, you know, and she's just not at that point yet.
Yeah, Chris, let's talk about, you mentioned that this criminal scheme statement was the best thing that the Mary Burke campaign had going for it, but that ad also mentioned that we're 10 out of 10 in the Midwest states for job creation, mm-hmm. and, you know, 37th in the nation, and indicating that that, you know, we're not doing so well in terms of job creation under Scott Walker. Isn't that a powerful tool?
Ultimately, that is, I think, the best, sharpest weapon they have. And it goes back to, obviously, the whole promise that Scott Walker made as candidate Walker, a promise that in hindsight was unfortunate and overly optimistic. And it is clear, even, I think, you know, try and pin him down, but, you know, even the governor's supporters will admit we're not going to get there. But that said, you know, it is, and talking about the Walker ad, it's a clear comparison of records right now that we're talking about. So we're talking about Scott Walker, who, you know, is not going to hit the 250,000 mark. That's unfortunate. However, the state is moving in the right direction. We have 101,000 jobs created in 3 years under the Scott Walker administration, outpacing anything that Jim Doyle was able to do in 8 years. You know, having lost in Jim Doyle's second term, I think it's 133,000 jobs, Scott Walker has turned things around. Things are going in the right direction. They're going the way we want them to go. As you know, Mary Burke, as part of her term in the Doyle administration, oversaw a major loss of jobs. Again, 133,000 in that second term. So you could say, well, you know, Scott Walker's going to have trouble based on the promise, but I think folks are going to have to take a look at the record of both candidates and say, okay, this guy's been in office. He is producing jobs. We're on the right track. We're headed in the right direction versus here's what we know about, Mary Burke as Commerce Secretary. We can see her record in the Doyle administration, and there's a stark contrast there.
Yeah, well, we'll get Christine to respond, but let's listen to the ad that Governor Walker's campaign put out last Friday, where they are criticizing Mary Burke and her tenure with the Doyle administration.
When Jim Doyle was governor and Mary Burke was commerce secretary, they gambled taxpayer money on dreadful policies, like billions in middle-class tax hikes on nursing home beds, gas, phones, and garbage. State budgets that created billions in deficits and unemployment rates above the national average for the only time in 25 years. And Mary Burke came out saying, "I support Governor Doyle's positions entirely. Wisconsin can't afford to be dealt another bad hand by Mary Burke."
So, Christine, is that fair game to go after Mary Burke's tenure as Commerce Secretary in Governor Doyle's administration?
Well, it's politics, so, you know, everything is fair game almost, I think. But the fact is, I would encourage everybody that's listening to read PolitiFact article about this ad. It's filled with falsehoods. And, there was no billions in tax hikes during Mary Burke's tenure as Commerce Secretary. When you look at this, it was a difference between, you know, when they actually looked at the budget that they're talking about, billions versus 19 million that actually occurred. So there's a huge difference in the amount of money that was raised. But, you know, I think what's really important here, and if you listen, Chris, what you're saying when you talk about this, we're in the right direction, we're going in the right direction. Well, we couldn't go anywhere but up because we're at the rock bottom. You know, and what Doyle, what we're trying to do here is pit Walker versus Governor Doyle, because he doesn't want to run against Mary Burke. He's afraid of Mary Burke. He sees the polls for Mary Burke. He's running against Mary Burke, not Jim Doyle. And he should stop saying that he's running against Jim Doyle. Mary Burke was Commerce Secretary from February of 2005 to November of 2007. And if you want to take the Great Recession and put that on her back, which occurred after she left Commerce Secretary, you're just going ahead with a falsehood, Chris. It's just not right. And so, you know, let's look at the facts. You know, we're looking at all the Midwestern states. We're dead last. All of the Midwestern states, even Michigan, which was decimated by the car industry's recession, you know, they've all rebounded. Michigan had an 8.7% gain. Wisconsin, 1.2%. I mean, we're really, really doing poorly. This isn't on the right track. If you're saying we're on the right track because we're going up, well, yeah, when you're dead bottom and you go up a little bit, I guess you're going up, but we're down. You know, look at the numbers. I mean, we're absolutely last in the Midwest, below Illinois. So those big signs that everybody sees when we come into our state, open for business, well, guess what? Business doesn't want to be here because the policies of Scott Walker haven't helped us. The other states are also doing you know, farming and manufacturing. But we're really, really at the bottom. So, no, I don't think it's right, Joy, and I think people should look at PolitiFact.
Chris?
Well, yeah, where do I begin?
Well, first of all, you know, why are we dead last?
Well, look, that's one ranking, and I think that, of course, again, it's a talking point similar to criminal scheme. You can use it, and that's great, and it gets people fired up for a minute, but you got to look a little deeper than that, I think. The point I would make is that, you know, you need to look beyond that and say, okay, well, where were we when Scott Walker took office? Yeah, we were dead last. I mean, Christine's right. We were at rock bottom at the end of Jim Doyle's term.
Well, there was the Great Recession, though.
I mean, there are other factors at play here, obviously. But the fact is, you have a governor who, in the middle of those times, really had just a bad record on jobs. We have a governor who... we know Jim Doyle prompts a visceral reaction among Republicans. So it's clear that the Walker campaign, this is a campaign tactic. They're going to tie Mary Burke, who served in Jim Doyle's administration for almost 3 years, to these job records. And I think to Christine's point, that absolutely is fair game. But Scott Walker is presiding over what the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, I'm just digging this out, the most recent 2011-2013 calendar year, private sector job gains, the best three-year consecutive gains under any single governor since the year 2000, outpacing the gains under the first 3 years of the previous governor's term by over 27,200 jobs. So if you want to start throwing numbers around and comparing the records of the previous administration, again, which Mary Burke was a part of for nearly 3 years, versus what Scott Walker has been able to do in his first 3 years, things are definitely moving in the right direction. And, you know, to folks like Christine and the Democrats out there, the best thing they can say in return is either he didn't, fulfill his promise, which, you know, on the face of it is absolutely true, and that this isn't good enough. And I would argue that people are going to need to take a look at that. Voters are going to need to consider, both sides of that argument and say, are we heading in the right direction? And do we really want to go back to the Doyle-era policies that were not as successful in job creation as Scott Walker has been in his first 3 years in office?
We need to take a short break. We'll ask listeners to weigh in on that question. Do you think Wisconsin's headed in the right direction or not? Do you think that Mary Burke should pull this ad that she just released, talking about criminal schemes and job numbers? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You can also bring up another issue from the news this week that you would like our two guests to discuss and debate. Today we are talking with Chris Lotto, who is a former communication director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, an attorney with the Bremer and Trollop Law Offices in Wausau, one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto, discussing and debating the top stories in state and national politics this week. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a few calls before we move on to some other issues. Samuel in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Samuel.
Hey, Joy. How you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I'll say, and I'm a Walker guy pretty through and through. I was very excited to vote for someone other than Mr. Doyle. I think one of the key things that the Walker campaign needs to take away from Mary Burke is that she came out and said she wasn't going to repeal Act 10. And I feel like that is indicative of someone who does have good business and economic sense that's clearly comes from the private sector. And between that and the fact that Mr. Walker hasn't actually reduced the scope and expense of the state government, which was one of his campaigning things targeting moderates and libertarian types, I really think that they need to look closely at that, because it's pretty clear that he's having some issues separating a government career from a career that's based on helping people build business and jobs.
Thanks, Samuel. Chris, you want to address that first?
Are we sure the caller was a Scott Walker supporter? That felt a little loaded.
You can doubt that.
Well, I will. Yeah, I think that what you have, you know, Mary Burke's background obviously includes Trek Bicycles, and I think we're going to be seeing more about that company's history, the campaign going forward, you know, how many jobs they've shipped overseas, how many Trek bikes are made in China, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sure she's going to point to that throughout the campaign as an example of her ability to run a business and create jobs, and it will be up to the Walker campaign to dismantle that, and I'm sure they'll be very effective at doing so. The whole thing with Act 10 is that, you know, despite the lingering resentment and anger that is out there from some segments of the population, I think it's clear the evidence is showing that Act 10 is working, and there's a reason why Mary Burke is going to stay away from it, and it's because of that. This is a governor who has been, you know, faced trial by fire. I mean, the guy's already been through, in his first 2 years in office, a recall that he survived handily. And is, facing an economy that has been slow to recover nationwide. And there are other numbers this week that came out that showed that our nation really is still struggling and, in fact, is on the precipice of going back to a recession. So it is not an excellent climate to be creating jobs. But the governor has been succeeding. He has created 101,000 private sector jobs since taking office, and things are heading in the right direction. And it really is up to voters. I said this before, but it is going to be up to voters to decide if what Scott Walker is bringing to the table is enough, or they're going to look at the Mary Burke record, look at what she did under Jim Doyle, and say, yeah, we want more of that.
Christine?
You're real good at the talking points, Chris. I really have to hand it to you.
Thank you.
I think that this man, Samuel, is just one person who's indicative of thinking voters who were Republicans by culture, or wanted to vote for Scott Walker and thought he would bring change and supported Act 10, but saw that what Act 10 really was really just a method for him to, you know, take away his political enemies, which he considered to be the teachers for some reason. But this man, I've heard from many people who said they voted for Scott Walker, and if you read the Republican press, you can see that they're saying that Walker's issues here were not to really reform education in a meaningful way, but there was something else behind Act 10 that he didn't take the next steps. So, you know, when we look at an issue of trust with people like Samuel, they're also looking at Walker. They're saying, well, now we've got this issue of two John Doe investigations. We've got this issue of a man who was a political careerist versus a woman like Mary Burke, Harvard and Georgetown educated, a business person who has all her life been dedicated not only to business but to good public works. And we say that this is someone who's pretty smart, and this is someone who maybe can put us on the right track, because we aren't on the right track. I just have to say, and I don't want to dominate the airtime, but I just want to say, you know, when you say we've got the best gains in 3 years, you're including that because that includes the years of the recession. And the rankings that I cite are the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They're the most reliable rankings there are. And so when we look at where we are, dead last in creation of jobs, dead last in growth, you know, we have to say we're not on the right track, and you can say it all you want, but it doesn't make it true. And so people that are smart and are thinking about it really look at the record and say, let's look for someone else who isn't a political careerist, but a real business person who actually knows how to create jobs, because Scott Walker clearly doesn't.
And just to be clear, one point, the information I was citing before was from the Bureau of Labor Statistics report. I just want to make that point.
We're going to talk more about the different reports that we hear about in the media, and the ones that the Walker campaign cites and the ones that the Burke campaign cites, on our state capitol report coming up on Monday. I think we're going to talk to Tom Still on Monday about that. Another Week in Reviewer. Sheila in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Sheila. Oops, I'm sorry, yeah, Sheila. Go ahead.
Oh, very specifically, my question is this, because they keep talking about the John Doe, and Mary Burke's campaign keeps attacking Governor Walker, stating that he was investigated or being investigated under the John Doe. First of all, I believe that the information has come out that he was not the target of the investigation. Second, I would like them to explain what specific crime they believe Governor Walker committed. because based off of all of the information that is coming out from the judges, he did not commit any crime, and he was not being investigated for a crime. I would like her to explain to me then why they feel it necessary to claim he was being investigated for a crime.
All right, we get it, Sheila. So, Christine, what crime did the governor allegedly coordinate here? And since the judges said that a crime was not committed?
Well, you know, this whole thing, thanks, Sheila, for your question, because I think it is important to look at where this all started coming out and why these documents all have come out. You know, the whole investigation started, you know, very small investigation, and it blossomed with John Doe 1 and John Doe 2 when they started to look at what were the activities of the Walker campaign people and his office staff with regard to, you know, campaigning on county time. That was John Doe 1, and it led to, you know, criminal convictions. And, you know, when an investigation takes place, subpoenas are issued and information comes forward. And when it becomes evident that there might be another crime, then the investigation moves ahead. And so what happened, because there was an issue of whether there was actual coordination between the Club for Growth and Walker's campaign, which is illegal under Wisconsin law, under certain circumstances with regard to fundraising and putting on ads, there was further investigation. And so when the further investigation took place by four different district attorneys from different counties, and by, as we talked before, by Mr. Schmitz, who was a former U.S. attorney, they found that there were other things that had to be investigated. And the only reason this all came forward was because the Club for Growth, you know, released it to the Wall Street Journal. And that's why all of this came out. Otherwise, probably none of us would have even known about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to think, Sheila, we all heard that Scott Walker was trying to, you know, get some plea agreement going. He must have thought there was something going on, or why would he be doing that? So, you know, is he the target of the investigation? No. Just like the president wasn't the target of the investigation with Watergate. But you know what? Stuff comes out. And when it did, the prosecutors are bound and ethically bound to further investigate. So that's what they're doing. This is far from over.
Chris?
Well, I think to Sheila's point and what Christine was just saying, that if you listen to Christine's lengthy answer very carefully, there is no criminal case against Scott Walker. And that was the point that Sheila was trying to get at.
Yeah, and very briefly, though, Chris, there was a law in the books that said this campaign coordination was not supposed to be happening, but isn't there now what those judges were saying was, well, maybe this shouldn't be against the law, even though Wisconsin says it is against the law.
Well, and if it's against the law, why hasn't anybody been charged? I mean, I think that, you know, part of the reason is as you read through these documents, it suggests that maybe the case doesn't rise to the level of a criminal prosecution. And you know, I'd rely on Christine to address the legal points more clearly than I could. But, you know, all this information is out there. We still have no charges in this case. Now, granted, you could say, well, it's not over. Two judges have stopped the investigation, so it's parked right now. But, you know, there haven't been any charges. And again, to Christine's point, what she was saying before, the investigation is not against Scott Walker, you know, in and of himself. We can't point to that. So there's a lot of smoke around these charges. These, and let me be clear, not charges, allegations. But when you kind of cut through all the, can I say BS on the air?
Yes, you can.
I just did. When you do that, then there's a lot of smoke, but there's not a lot of fire.
Well, let's move on to some other issues. We have a lot of callers who are interested in this, but we must review more issues in the news this week. Let's, you know, we're going to follow up on some of these issues on our state capitol report on Monday. Another a story in the news this week that we hope to follow up on Monday was a study that found Wisconsin has the second deepest cuts in per student spending in the nation since 2008, second only to Alabama. Christine, your reaction to that news?
Well, you know, as a former member of a school board, it was really upsetting to me. You know, I think that it's evidence, more evidence that there are reasons why we're not winning in the jobs war, because we are cutting education. You know, that has been seen by many of the analysts to be one of the problems Wisconsin has, that we're not investing in education. We don't have enough people graduating with further higher degrees in Wisconsin than we should, and that might help us with regard to our jobs problem. But I think it's just sad when we say that Alabama and Wisconsin are at the bottom of the level. We always were so proud of our state as being at one of the top, and to hamper our educators by cutting them so into, you know, we're through the tissue. We're way deep into the bone with these cuts. And to say that we are cutting, we're down to that level, is just tragic, I think.
Mm-hmm. Chris, your reaction?
Well, yeah, I had a real reaction to this. So, you know, first of all, the source of this piece, this original study, was you know, what the New York Times, no less, called a liberal think tank, that is the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. So right away, that raises a red flag for me. You know, and the thing about studies like this is that they're kind of built on a false premise, and it rings alarm bells for those who equate more public education spending directly with better education. The more money you pour into it, the better the results are going to be. And, you know, it does also give, Democrats and Wisconsin liberals this ammo, again, this little talking point that Christine used, that, you know, making the false claim that, you know, as a result of these numbers, Wisconsin's education system is as bad as Alabama, which is, I think, a little disingenuous and kind of slams Wisconsin teachers and schools that are doing great work in the state. We do have a good education system in Wisconsin, you know, and all the public school kids out there, including my own, who are studying hard and getting a good public education right now in Wisconsin. The fact is, even when you look at this study, if you want to dig a little deeper, you know, 35 states, the vast majority of states, did reduce per student funding. And this has been a tough recession. These numbers go back to 2008. You know, everybody, including public schools, had to feel the pinch here. And it's a cliche to say it, but the money doesn't grow on trees. There is a cause and effect here. The economy slows. Businesses make less money. More people are out of work. Tax dollars aren't coming in like they are during boom times. And difficult decisions have to be made.
Well, I'd just like to say, if I could, Joy.
Very
briefly. Just briefly. I didn't say that Wisconsin is equal to Alabama in terms of the quality. I think it's unbelievable that we cut when we should be spending more. And I think that we have to recognize briefly, Joy, that the Republicans chaired a task force for the Rural Schools Task Force, and they asked for more money. I mean, they said, they recognized that our superintendents say we're in dire straits. And the Democrats wanted to spend $135 million more on our schools in 2 years, and that was rejected. And we need this. We shouldn't be making our school districts go through referendums just to keep their schools open. That's not what we asked for. And that's not a Republican issue, and that's not a Democratic issue. School board members know what this means, and they are sick of this, and they are working their tails off to make certain our schools can stay open, that we have the supplies we need in the school, the teachers can be, you know, teaching in adequate facilities. So this is not right, and we should not be proud of this whatsoever.
Very quick reactions from both of you to one more state issue, and then we're going to move on to a number of stories in national news. It's called one of the biggest cases of voter fraud ever in Wisconsin. A Milwaukee area insurance executive has been charged with casting multiple votes for Republican candidates, including Governor Scott Walker in the 2012 recall election. Robert Monroe of Shorewood was charged with 13 felonies related to his voting a dozen times in five elections between 2011 and 2012. What's the deal with that, Chris?
Well, it's an eloquent need, or rather an eloquent argument for the need for a beefed up voter ID in Wisconsin. You know, we have apparently a Republican who did a lot of voter fraud in the state over the last few years. You know, apparently doing it pretty well for a while there, a dozen times in five elections before he got caught. Of course, he should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And we could take steps in the state to ensure that this kind of thing isn't happening. But Democrats are working hard to block it. And the fact is, supporters of ID, voter ID, we don't care if those who are caught are Democrats or Republicans. That's one of the key sort of fallacies here. We just want to protect the integrity of legally cast votes. That's what this has been all about. And Democrats like to say that voter ID targets Democrats. That's not true. It targets anyone who's trying to scam the law and disenfranchise legal votes. And that would include, allegedly, Mr. Monroe.
Christine.
I think this is, when I read this, I had to laugh because keep in mind that voter ID goes against voters who are impersonating others to cast a vote, right? That's what voter ID prevents, impersonation. In this case, we have a guy who voted under his own name. He just went to another state. He has a home in another state. He voted in Wisconsin. He voted in Indiana. And then there were some absentee ballots. Voter ID would not have prevented this.
He's using his son's name and his girlfriend's son's name. It's not just using his own name,
ballot,
Christine.
Absentee ballot. Voter ID would not have prevented this. Voter ID does not prevent this. So we cannot, you can say all you want about voter ID, which is solely, in my opinion, is solely for the purpose of trying to suppress the vote. This guy didn't impersonate anyone else. He went under his own name, and then he used absentee ballots, which would not have been fixed with a voter ID. So this is really kind of funny how everybody says it's all the Democrats causing voter fraud. Here we got the only example that's come forward that anybody can point to is this Republican guy, and voter ID would not have helped it at all. So this is really, from my opinion, pretty funny.
Well,
it's sad too, isn't it?
Chris is shrugging his shoulders. There was not in-person voter impersonation with the absentee ballots, I think is the distinction that Christine is making.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to some national issues and our Week in Review quiz. We are talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto during this edition of the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for our Week in Review quiz. Milwaukee resident Christopher Latham Scholes made his mark as a newspaper editor and state legislator in the 19th century. But he's also well known for inventing the first commercially successful version of a once common device. Monday, June 23rd. Marked the 146th anniversary of the patent, which was filed back in 1868. What did Milwaukee resident Scholes invent? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you 5 minutes to guess or to answer that question. Will reveal the answer and the winner at the end of the program. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto. Let's talk about some of the national and international stories in the news this week. Kind of clip through as many as we can. After a week of escalating conflicts in Iraq, Secretary of State John Kerry is urging Persian Gulf nations to help pull the country back from the brink of civil war. Christine, any thoughts as to what the U.S. Ought to do to help pull the country back from the brink of civil war?
Oh, this is a tough one, isn't it, Joy? The way I look at this is, God bless Secretary Kerry for going and trying. This is, our policies in the Middle East have been very difficult. It's, from my perspective, it feels like, we went in there and broke it and now we have to fix it and we own it. And he's trying to go in and try to prevent more eruption, and that will really affect our country with regard to, the trade policies and the resources. So I think that, I can't say what he should do, but I think what he's trying to do is right. See if they can bring these countries together. I'm hopeful that his meeting with King Abdullah does some good and that these people can find some peace, but I'm frightened to say that it doesn't appear so, and it looks like we're in for some very, very hard times.
Let me get a caller in and then get Chris to respond. John in Madison, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Maliki refuses to step down. He refuses to form a unification government, and right now, we're on the cusp of another massive war. Iraq is right now splintered into three parts, and they all hate each other. And it's not just ISIS that's on one side. It's ISIS plus disaffected Sunnis and ex-Baathists who for the last 3 years have not gotten jobs or have their infrastructure rebuilt. And the Kurds now have taken over Kirkuk in the north. So we've got a situation where we are now involved with 300 advisors. We've got Predator drones with Hellfire missiles over Baghdad right now. And Assad, Syria, bombed Iraq, trying to get at the ISIS forces at the border 2 days ago. Mm. And we've got people, we've got 12 Quds forces from Iran sending in 12 advisors now, in addition to our 300 military advisors. So we've got allies of Iran and Syria. Now, the question is, do we allow this country, which is in three pieces right now, to stabilize and form three separate nations, or do we embark on a incredibly bloody, horrible reunification project?
Let's see if Chris has an answer to that.
Thanks. I don't. I could take my shots at the Obama administration's record on foreign policy. I won't do that. I think that, you know, first and foremost, you know, as the caller made the point, it is a mess over there. And we just hope that the administration, for the sake of, you know, the safety of innocence, but certainly the safety of the American people, you know, America is obviously bone tired of war. You know, as a nation and our military forces have been through a lot. But ISIS is a very, very real, very extreme and very well financed threat. And no matter what happens, whatever Kerry and the Obama administration does going forward, they have to keep all options on the table to ensure first and foremost that American lives are protected. To me, that's just that's the number one thing. And maybe that's just common sense, but that has to be the highest priority. And that includes keeping every option on the table.
Let me you had mentioned earlier you said you wouldn't go into the president's poll numbers on foreign policy, the president's poll numbers are down there, Christine, and bad economy numbers are also out there. There was an article in Politico that the shrinking economy is spelling trouble for Democrats. What's your response to that?
Well, you know, the poll numbers, especially on foreign policy, I just want to respond just quickly to that. You know, the president ran as someone absolutely opposed to war. And so it's, you know, when he goes in and he doesn't take action, then the people, you know, get a little upset with him and the poll numbers go way down. And so now what are we going to do? As your caller said, it's a disaster. And I agree with you, Chris. If we don't take ISIS seriously, we're going to be making a huge mistake. On the economy numbers, Joy, you know, I don't know if, Chris, you want to respond to that, but on the U.S. economy numbers, you know, you had said earlier, I think, Chris, you thought maybe we were on the verge of a recession. I don't know where you got that, but what I understand is that, you know, the first quarter numbers were down, and we in Wisconsin know this better than anybody, worst winter of ever, and it caused a big problem for consumer prices and construction and all kinds of things went down in the first quarter. And what I understand from looking at the research that I did to prepare for this, that we are looking at potentially a 4% expansion in the second quarter. That's what they're hoping for. I think the Fed said maybe they don't know exactly what it's going to be, but they're hopeful for a better expansion. So let's see what happens. Yeah, if the economy goes down, it hurts who's ever in office. So I'm praying that it goes better.
Yeah, and I, you know, Christine makes a good point. I mean, I don't think anybody's like rooting for failure. We want to see Americans do better. We want to see folks being able to get jobs and be able to work. I mean, this is a difficult time for everybody, and it's not, you know, politically speaking, yeah, it doesn't help Democrats right now. They're the ones in power in the White House and you know, in the Senate, but you know, we don't want to be rooting for failure either. I think these are the short-term ramifications of what the nation is going through. The first quarter numbers were not good. You know, it remains to be seen whether it's a blip. You want to hope that it is, and you want to hope that we do recover. You know, but the Democrats face a lot of problems this year. I mean, they have a guy at the top who's not running, but his numbers have been underwater for solidly a year, whether it's overall job approval, on the economy, on foreign policy. You know, President Obama has not been in good shape for quite a while, and Democrats have to now, you know, go back to their districts and run on that and what they've been able to accomplish or not accomplish. So, yeah, they're going to face a lot of challenges.
President Obama was pushing for family-friendly work policies today, held a White House summit on working families. And one of the policies he thinks is long overdue in this country is paid paternal leave or family leave. Is it time for paid family leave in the U.S., Christine?
Well, as a working woman and as someone who has working women work for me, I think that paid family leave is an excellent idea. I mean, I think that we all have to recognize that when you want to have a baby and you have to take 6 weeks off without leave, if you can take 6 weeks off without pay, I mean, it's really a hardship for people. And it makes it very difficult for this country to raise families that are cohesive and healthy children. So, you know, it's just good policy to have paid leave. The problem is the cost. And so who's going to pay for it? You know, and the estimates are that it'll cost $20 billion if we have a national paid leave program, and every worker will have to pay something on their payroll taxes to support it. The question is, do people really want to do it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's something that we really have to go to the voters on and let them decide. Mm-hmm. I think it's time that we really look at this. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's a common sense answer. I mean, it sounds good in theory, but yeah, somebody's got to pay for it. And businesses that are still struggling to recover across the country, can they afford it right now? You know, it's a difficult time. It's a time of recovery, and we're still kind of hanging on that precipice where we could go back. So, you know, can we afford it right now? I think that's part of the question. And, you know, I think President Obama could have pushed for this earlier in his presidency. I wonder how much of this, just being a little cynical, is just lip service right now because his numbers are underwater.
Very little time left, and I apologize for that, but the Supreme Court issuing all sorts of rulings this week. And let's just talk about the one that maybe is getting the most attention. The court struck down a Massachusetts law requiring protesters to stay 35 feet away from abortion clinic entrances. So the buffer zones, the protest buffer zones struck down by the Supreme Court. Christine, how big a deal is this?
Big deal. Big deal, I think. We have to see how it's going to be put into effect even in Wisconsin. As someone who has walked those gauntlets, when I was at the Democratic convention, I wasn't going into an abortion clinic. I was walking into the Democratic convention, and I had Right to Lifers putting horrific photographs in front of me and yelling at me, and they throw blood at us, and you know, it's pretty horrible. Mm-hmm. And so I think buffer zones are a good idea just for the protection and for the keeping peace. But it's a First Amendment right, and so the Supreme Court did what it thinks is right. It's going against its former decision, so it's hard to know how this is going to play out, but it's not pretty.
Chris. Yeah, it's important to note that First Amendment point. And I believe that the decision was unanimous, which is telling, because that's the liberal members of the court as well. Now, I know the decision has nuances in it, and not everybody went all the way on certain points of it. And Christine, if we had more time, could probably elaborate on that. But I think that's the key to keep in mind here, is that all nine justices were essentially on the same page here, which I think is telling.
Well, there will be more national news discussed during On Points Week in Review coming up in our next hour. Let me congratulate Art in Milwaukee. He is the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz. What once common device was invented in Milwaukee 146 years ago? And the answer is, does anybody know?
I would have to cheat and Google it. I don't know.
The typewriter. It's the typewriter. The typewriter was invented by newspaper editor, Wisconsin State legislator, and Milwaukee resident Christopher Latham Scholes. And the patent anniversary was June 23rd. So, gosh, you know, when's the last time you used a typewriter, Chris?
I flunked typing in. I had a pass fail and I flunked it.
Oh, well, I got
the old ones that you had to push buttons. That was no good.
I got a B in junior high, so it's been a boy. It's been a while. College?
Yeah, it really has. Well, thanks to both of you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Christine Bremer Moogly and Chris Lotto. Thanks to Christy Taylor and Justin Williams for producing this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Have a great weekend. This is the Ideas Network.